Hello, welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly, the festive edition. My name is David Connolly, of course, and this news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. On this solstice day, we report on Newgrange and the new lease of light it achieved in the 1960s rebuild. A new row hits Stonehenge, and the relocated Dakar Rally in Argentina could damage ancient sites. Anthropologists conclude that the Hobbit represents a new species, and Danish passage graves are examined from an astronomical perspective. While a prehistoric cremation pit is unearthed on a US island, and an ancient Syrian necropolis is also unearthed. While a farmer digs up ancient sanctuary in Italy, he ends up falling foul of the law, and a prehistoric settlement is uncovered in Somerset. However, in Japan, a mystery shrouds the ancient Jomon stone circles, and the world's oldest portrait is under threat in Australia. And finally, tools with handles are even more ancient than previously thought. So let's get started. Several leading Irish archaeologists have discovered that a controversial reconstruction of Newgrange Passage Tomb 4 decades ago led to the accidental detection of its key feature, the roof box. The box, a 25-centimetre high opening that captures the dawning sun on the shortest day of the year, was only found during the rebuilding, according to a new book by Boyne Valley archaeologists Geraldine and Matthew Stout. Ironically, the rebuild of the tomb by the late Professor O'Kelly of University College Cork might never have been permitted under today's archaeological standards. The rebuild involved some, shall we say, liberties with several key features, including the roof box. However, examination of drawings and records kept by Professor O'Kelly show a transparency in the nature of his decision-making. Built 1,000 years before Stonehenge, Newgrange was discovered 300 years ago, but its full significance was only identified by Professor O'Kelly from the early 1960s. "I don't see any reason why I shouldn't take on this dig. I feel it will probably be very dull." So were Professor O'Kelly's words to a colleague in 1961. She also said he would be delighted to know that the solstice event could be broadcast internationally via a live internet web stream, as is occurring at the Chamber and County Meath yesterday. The Office of Public Works is collaborating with the International Year of Astronomy 2009 based at NUI Galway to transmit the event. The illumination of the passage tomb depends on the weather. Well, you can actually see a small video about this event with some information about it and the run-up to it, and indeed the amazing event itself on pasthorizons.tv/TV. That was www.pasthorizons.tv/TV. Shall we just say, I think that you'll find that the 2007 one was slightly more impressive, but that is an incredibly interesting film to watch. A last gasp attempt to build a world-class visitor centre at Stonehenge in time for the 2012 Olympics is in tatters because of a major row between the country's two leading heritage organisations over its location. After spending £38 million of public money over the almost 20 years of aborted schemes, including most recently one by Denton Corker Marshall, then Architecture Minister Margaret Hodge promised last December to have a £20 million temporary centre ready for the influx of tourists during the 2012 Games. But with little more than 6 months remaining before a planning application has to be submitted, the project is in deadlock after the National Trust and English Heritage have clashed over which site it should be built on. A major announcement was expected from Hodge's successor, Barbara Follett, last week, but was postponed until January because several stakeholders, including the National Trust, objected to the centre being built at the archaeologically sensitive Fargo Plantation. The Fargo proposal is also controversial because it is within the World Heritage Site. Objectors want the centre further from the stones. The agreement the government entered into was that it would not encourage development within the World Heritage Site. An English Heritage spokesman said there are differences, but they're not insurmountable. We're aware of the tight deadline and hope to come to an agreement in the new year. Oh, hold on. I just think I saw some pigs fly past my window there, along with Santa. Well, we really, really hope that they can actually come to some sort of decision. But given it's been over 20 years of this wrangling, I wouldn't hold your breath. Touch wood, though. A top archaeologist fears that the upcoming Dakar rally, relocated to Argentina and Chile because of security fears, could damage important archaeological sites. Norm Arato, head of the Argentine Association of Archaeologists, commented that there would be an avalanche of metal smoke and roar of motors. The rally, which this year will feature more than 500 vehicles, was transferred from Africa because of terrorism concerns and will be held in South America from January the 3rd to the 18th. Arato said the rally will speed through burial sites and other sacred areas in Patagonia and in the northern province of Catamarca past Paulo Blanco, an archaeological site that contains the remains of 2,000-year-old villages. However, Leonardo Alvarez, an official with the Argentine Tourism Secretariat, said the last thing they would do is pass through protected archaeological areas. The company organising the rally, a Maori sports organisation, presented an environmental study that included archaeological risk, and this was approved by the state governments. But Rato was sceptical, making the point that if they have such reports, then why have they not made them public? Just as a passing thought, the Dakar rally was probably doing the same in Africa. I wonder just how many sites were run over there as well. The University of Minnesota anthropology professor Kieran McNulty, along with colleague Karen Babb of Stony Brook University in New York, has made an important contribution towards solving one of the great paleoanthropological mysteries of recent days. That fossilized skeletons resembling a hobbit creature represent an entirely new species in humanity's evolutionary chain. Discovered on the Indonesian island of Flores in 2003, controversy has surrounded the fossilized hominid skeletons of the so-called Hobbit people, or Homo floresiensis, ever since. Experts are still debating whether the 18,000-year-old remains merely belong to a diminutive population of modern-day humans, with one individual exhibiting a microcephaly and a normally small head, or represent a previously unrecognized branch in humanity's family tree. Using 3D modeling methods, McNulty and his fellow researchers compared the cranial features of this real-life hobbit to those of a simulated fossil human of similar stature, to determine whether or not such a species was distinct from modern humans. Comparing the simulation to the original Flores skull discovered in 2003, McNulty and Babb were able to demonstrate conclusively that the original hobbit skull fits the expectations for a small fossil hominid species and not for a modern human. Their study was published online this month in the Journal of Human Evolution. While the debate over Homo floresiensis will continue, McNulty believes the comprehensive analysis of the relationships between size and shape in human evolution is a critical step towards eventually understanding the place of the Flores hobbits in human evolutionary history. Well, not to be too flippant, all we need now is the one true ring to just confirm it all. Passage graves are mysterious barrows from the Stone Age. New research at Niels Bohr Institute at the University of Copenhagen indicates that the Stone Age graves' orientation in the landscape could have astronomical explanation. The Danish passage graves are likely orientated according to the path of the full moon, perhaps even according to the full moon immediately before a lunar eclipse. The results are published in the scientific journal Acta Archaeologica. Klaus Clausen, who graduated as astronomer from the Niels Bohr Institute, has always been interested in archaeology. There's many Stone Age graves in Denmark, where archaeologists estimate around 40,000 large stone graves were built between 3,500 and 3,000 BCE. Only about 500 of the large passage graves, called giant tombs, are preserved today, but one of the great mysteries is their orientation in the landscape. With the help of GPS, a compass and a surveying instrument, Klaus Clausen measured the orientation of entrance tunnels of approximately 100 of these passage graves. It turned out there was a remarkable concentration of specific orientations. He had a theory that it could have been a calendar system, but the theory did not hold up to more scrutiny. However, his supervisor suggested that he begin to look at the connection between the sun and the moon, and especially the lunar eclipses, because there were two orientations that seemed to occur more frequently than others. There's a significant concentration of orientations towards east-southeast, as seen from within the passage graves themselves. It can be interpreted that the passage graves were orientated to a winter sunrise, but researchers think it is more likely they were positioned according to the rise of the full moon, for example, the first full moon after the spring equinox. How the Stone Age people had known that a lunar eclipse could come after the full moon is unknown, but astronomer Per Kjærgaard Rasmussen explains that if one had observed a lunar eclipse, there was a very strong likelihood that another one would come along in 12 months or 18.6 years later. Well, that clears up for me then. However, that's a very interesting line of study. The recent excavations of a prehistoric American Indian burial site on Ossabaw Island in Georgia, USA, revealed cremated remains, an unexpected find that offers a glimpse into ancient Indian culture. State archaeologist David Crass of the Georgia Department of Natural Resources said prehistoric cremations were rare, particularly during the early time in which preliminary evidence suggests this one occurred, possibly between 1000 BCE and 350 CE. The remains also mark the first cremation ever uncovered on Ossabaw, a state-owned heritage preserve about 20 miles south of Savannah. Erosion from natural causes exposed the burial, and scientists from the DNR Office of the State Archaeologist, the non-profit Lammer Institute, and Georgia Council on American Indian Concerns worked together under the council's direction to excavate the roughly 6 by 6 foot pit. The work revealed a cremation pit that had been lined with wood and oyster shells. The body had been placed on top of the wood and the contents of the pit burned. The human remains recovered were primarily from the extremities, indicating that the deceased had been disinterred after cremation, possibly to be reburied elsewhere. The charcoal will be submitted for carbon-14 dating, but analysis of the pottery recovered from the pit suggests the cremation may date to the Refuge Deptford phase in the Woodland period, around 1000 BCE to 350 CE. After analysis, the remains will be reinterred in a secure location under the auspices of the Council of American Indian Concerns. Crass expects the carbon-14 dating results and details on the radar survey by early next year. Access to Ossabaw Island is limited to approved research projects and hunts managed by DNR's Georgia Wildlife Resources Division. Details about this can be found on the website at www.georgiawildlife.com. An Italian-led team of experts have uncovered a vast ancient necropolis near the Syrian oasis of Palmyra. The team, led by Daniele Morandi Bonacossi, believes the burial site dates from the second half of the 3rd millennium BCE. The necropolis comprises around at least 30 large burial mounds. This is the first evidence that such an area of semi-desert outside the oasis was occupied during the early Bronze Age. Necropolis is the latest in a string of dazzling finds by the team. Efforts have chiefly focused on the ancient Syrian capital of Qurtana, northeast of modern-day Homs. Since starting work there in 1999, the team have uncovered more than 1,500 square metres of the town's acropolis, dating back to the Middle and Late Bronze Age. Among the highlights of the investigation was the discovery of a sprawling complex since named the Royal Palace. Qurtana, a once powerful trading city, vied with the centres of Aleppo and Mari for geopolitical supremacy of the entire region in the first half of the 2nd millennium BCE. A farmer working his land south of Rome dug up hundreds of artefacts from a 2,500-year-old sanctuary, but eventually ran foul of the police when he tried to sell the ancient hoards. After spotting fragments of pottery and soil dug up by the farmer, authorities searched his house last month and seized more than 500 artefacts, including perfume vials, cups and miniature vases used as votive objects. The art squad of the Carabinieri paramilitary police said the farmer was placed under investigation for allegedly trafficking in antiquities. Ancient artefacts found in Italy are considered state property and finds must be reported to the authorities. Archaeologists said that they will continue to excavate the sanctuary, which dates back to the 7th and 6th century BCE, and is located near the town of Aprilia, some 25 miles south of Rome. The find could expand knowledge about the area's history in pre-Roman times, when it was inhabited by Latin-speaking people under the influence of the Etruscan civilization that dominated central Italy. So there we are, harsh but fair. But the lesson there is just don't steal our shared past. Share our shared past. We also have a similar thing in Scotland. Basically, everything belongs to the crown. So therefore, if you find something, you have to report it. You might even be rewarded for it. But the best thing to do is actually share what you find. Anyway, that's my New Year resolution for you all. If you could find something, then let others know about it. An unknown prehistoric settlement has been revealed during archaeological work in East Taunton, Somerset. The dig was commissioned by the Somerset County Council before construction of a park and ride scheme. The remains of a prehistoric farm and surrounding fields reveal human occupation from the late Bronze Age right up to the Roman period. Councillor Justin Robinson said that this was a fascinating piece of Taunton's prehistoric heritage. Well, given the current situation of archaeology in the UK and indeed around the world, I think the more support that we can get, the better. Actually, archaeology is relevant to people today. In 1861, at Oshoro, southwest Hokkaido in Japan, a party of herring fishermen, migrants from Honshu, were laying the foundations for a new fishing port when they found a broad circular arrangement of large rocks, strikingly symmetrical and evidently man-made. They would have been astonished to learn that the Oshoro stone circle is a relic from prehistory. The late Jomon period, around 2,500 to 1,000 BCE, was an age of northward migration. The north was warming and severe rainfall was ravaging the established Jomon sites in the south. Perhaps resettlement stimulated thought, for it also coincided with a novel Jomon institution. What they're thinking are the cemetery. It's one of about 30 late Jomon stone circles scattered through the northern part of Japan. In terms of size, it ranks about midway between the smallest enclosures and the largest one, such as the one at Oyu, bounded by thousands of stones. No bones have ever been found to make an airtight case of the cemetery theory, however, but relatively few Jomon bones have been found anywhere else. The acid in the soil claims them long before the archaeologist trowel cam. The site is a shadow of what it would have been at the height of its construction around 1500 BCE, a victim first of 19th century Japanese pioneers' eager approach to get handy construction material, and also a well-intentioned but misguided clean-up campaign, the first in 1908 preparatory to a royal visit by the Crown Prince and future Emperor Taisho. With regards to it being a cemetery, according to experts, it's because of the large number of unidentifiable and probably ritual objects unearthed in the vicinity, partly because of the many tools found unbroken, suggesting grave or ritual goods. Another suggestion, of course, is it was a market, a trading centre for the exchange of tools, local foods, regional products, information and gossip. In a way, who knows? The world's oldest depiction of a human face could be threatened if Australian mining companies are permitted to build an explosive factory on the remote Burrup Peninsula in the northwest of the country. A bulbous image of indiscernible sex with huge eyes and sunken cheeks, the 10,000-year-old carving is chipped out of hard rock. thousands of other carvings, mostly of plants and animals, which date back to beyond the last ice age, are scattered around the peninsula. Archaeologists believe that Aboriginal tribes made the distinctive carvings up to 30,000 years ago, which would make them nearly twice as old as the Lascaux cave paintings in Dordogne in France. Last year, the mining company Woodside Energy won permission to move 170 pieces of rock art to a new site to make way for a liquefied natural gas plant. Next year, Burrup Nitrates is planning to build an explosives plant on the site. Opposition to the development is led by Robin Chappell, a British-born Green MP. He attacked Woodside's decision to move some examples and likens it to taking a couple of pillars out of Stonehenge and putting them somewhere else. The value of the carvings lies in their unbroken depiction of ancient tribes, adaptation to thousands of years of climate change. This rock art represents the longest art tradition anywhere in the world. The site is sacred to the local Yaburara Aborigines, whose ancestors' carvings tell of how the tribes changed their hunting and gathering methods to survive. Some carvings from 25,000 years ago show the hunted animals and flat-tailed wallabies, while in more recent times, as the ice melted, they returned their attention to turtles and Tasmanian tigers. Chappell hopes that Colin Barnett, the new Premier of Western Australia, may stand up to the developers, but it appears to be a forlorn hope. Well, we can only add our hope as well to that. In a gripping instance of Stone Age survival, Neanderthals used a tar-like substance to fasten sharpened stones to handles as early as 70,000 years ago, a new study suggests. Stone points and sharpened flakes unearthed in Syria since 2000 contain the residue of bitumen, a natural adhesive substance, on spots where the implements would have been secured to handles of some type. The process of attaching a tool to a handle is known as hafting. The Neanderthals likely found the bitumen in nearby tar sands, the team reports. Stone tools of the type found at the Syrian site are typically attributed to Neanderthals. They frequently use bitumen and other tars as an adhesive for hafting and perhaps sometimes as a sleeve to protect a tool's user's hand. The researchers are claiming the new age of 70,000 years ago places the practice earlier than the previous findings from 1996 of 40,000-year-old, when they found artifacts unearthed at the same location, el-Talal. Following the analysis of microscopic wear on 90,000-year-old stone artifacts from early Homo sapiens sites in Israel in 2007, it was shown that stone points had probably been attached to hand-cast spears with unidentified adhesive. Also in 2007, archaeologist Marlies Lombard of Natal Museum in South Africa reported that modern humans living in southern Africa around 60,000 years ago hafted stone points using an adhesive mix of resin and ground pigment. In 2006, Italian researchers found two sharpened stones dating to more than 100,000 years ago that Neanderthals had apparently attached to handles using birch bark tar. The tar-stained stones lay amongst bones of animals that belong to a now extinct elephant species. In the new study, black stains were identified on 200 of more than 1,000 stone implements excavated from several related sediment layers at el-Talal. A closer investigation showed that the ancient residue and modern bitumen shared clearly identical chemical compositions. The researchers then made an adhesive out of bitumen mixed with quartz and gypsum and applied it in various amounts to 10 experimentally produced stone implements. After drying, the mixture of displayed microscopic features much like those of the residue on el-Talal artifacts. So it just goes for me to say happy Christmas to you all when it comes, or should I say happy solstice, perhaps Winterval or Yule, or whatever in fact you would like to get up to at this festive time. All the best from all of us here at Badger and at Stone Pages and at Past Horizons. So remember, pop along to pasthorizons.com if you want to think about starting a bit of archaeology in the new year. Have a look at our magazine, which comes out in January. www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. Always pop along to Badger at www.bajr.org, which is all change for 2009. And, of course, have a look at the fabulous Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Thank you so much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly, and happy Christmas to you all.